I travel a lot. I can sell you frequent flyer miles if you want. I'm going back to Guatemala tomorrow, not because I think this meeting is boring, but it's Day of the Dead, which is kind of the big deal for us down there. Anyway, so I'm not going to, no disclosure, I'm not going to talk precisely about my own research, but a research training program that we have in Guatemala. However, I thought I'd give a little bit of background, not only because our presentations with Lauren tie together, but also to understand why is it that we need research in this part of the world. Small country, slightly smaller than Tennessee, democracy for a few, and we could get into that a little bit later. We just finished a 30-year civil war, 20 years ago, but we're still suffering what happened after the civil war. A very high literacy rate, particularly among the indigenous rural populations, one of the most unequal countries in the world and in Latin America, only after Haiti and Bolivia, we are one of the most unequal countries in the region. What about the healthcare system? We have a very low investment in health. Less than 2% of the national budget is dedicated to health. You can seek healthcare either in the public sector or in the private sector. The public sector is supported by a social security network, which means that every person that pays, that is formally employed, will get access to a social security system, pretty much like here in the U.S., but the social security system in Guatemala also has a network of hospitals and maternal care and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, no more than 30% of the population is covered by a formal employer. So most of the population does not have access to the social security system. You can also access healthcare through the government healthcare system that has two major level 3 hospitals in Guatemala City. It has small departments, we call them departments, what you would call them here state hospitals, which are usually understaffed and with not a lot of resources and equipment. The health centers, which are like basically primary care clinics in smaller cities and villages. By law, a couple of years ago, the government decided they would not charge anything, which, I mean, in paper sounds pretty good, but the government basically cannot afford to deliver healthcare for everyone for free. You can also go to the private healthcare system, which has several fairly big private hospitals considering the size of the country. Most of these are staffed by physicians with international training. Most of this training has been in Mexico or South America. The paramedical staff in these hospitals, and not only in private hospitals, but also in the public hospitals, has a very low profile of education. You can find some of the state-of-the-art equipment, pretty much similar to what you find in a normal private hospital in the U.S. However, these are spread out between cardiovascular unit, and we form like specialty units, which only increases the cost of care and provision of care, radiotherapy centers, and so on and so forth. However, this type of treatment is mostly for patients with insurance or out of pocket expenses. And of course, there's a 1 or 1.5% of the population that usually will travel abroad to get healthcare. And by that, I mean they have a private jet. They move over to Houston, get their health care, and then go back to Guatemala over the weekend. But that's also part of the story. This is a pretty good website. It's worldmapper.org. That's not the one that you see on the bottom of the line. So you see that's the world. Guatemala is just that small country beneath Mexico. We could barely see it. I think it's green or gray. So the countries are not going to shrink, and the size of the country is going to increase or decrease depending on the indicator that I show. So say, for example, I put scientific production. You see the U.S., Europe is pretty big, Canada you can see there, Brazil is up there, so is Chile, and you can see a little bit of Argentina. Basically, Guatemala disappeared from the map. So we're not contributing basically anything to science, which translates into a little bit more things. So what are we good at Guatemala? There we are. When you go to Starbucks, that's what you see. That's big Guatemala down there. Canada and the U.S. disappear. You see a little bit of Mexico. Guatemala basically took all of Central America, and Europe disappeared. So it's kind of funny. You see, it's a pretty easy way to see what's going on in what country. So we're pretty good at making coffee, but not making any science. And so far, I haven't seen one country develop or increase their health indicators out of just making coffee. So why is it that we need research training in Guatemala? First of all, the educational setting is not suitable for research. We don't get any adequate training on research methods. Research is seen more like a requirement as opposed to an interest. And we do it in medical school and healthcare, in the healthcare field, as I have to as opposed to I want to. And this will ultimately reflect in poor academic credentials, which in turn will lead that most of Latin Americans and Guatemalans in this case will have very low access to academic medical trainings or academic public health trainings abroad, including the U.S. So then we do have some isolated research efforts, but we don't have any identified leadership, you know. It's not that we have like a research champion that you could go look into for a career. And therefore, we don't have either identified sources for recruitment. So even if you were to have someone doing research down there and looking for postdocs and fellows, it's really hard because you don't have the universities set up to fuel them into the research field. So why would we need to change? First of all, for clinical reasons, right? We need to implement evidence-based medicine, cost-effectiveness interventions, in particular in countries like Guatemala, where the healthcare system is so poorly funded. We would need to be putting more money into these cost-effectiveness strategies, and we would need the data to document which are those. It's pretty obvious that evidence-based policy making can lead to sound policy and therefore health improvement. And tobacco is probably a very good example of how sound policy will lead to improvement in health outcomes. And heart disease is probably the best example. And we would also need leadership, but not only senior, but also junior leadership. And I'm not only talking about research, but also about knowledge translation. So we're not only talking about generating science, but also having that science getting ultimately to those people that are affected by the problems. So having that in mind, we designed this chronic disease control research fellowship, which is focused originally on tobacco because it's the number one risk factor for NCDs, as it was just mentioned. And we sought to establish through mentorship a new generation of young researchers. And I mean, this is kind of confusing because it's not that we have old researchers, we just don't have researchers. So you could just say just building a generation of researchers. And we assume that through mentorship, we would lead to capacity building, and mentorship would also have a multiplying effect, that we would train the mentors, that they would then themselves become mentors, if that makes any sense. So we're trying to change, first of all, individuals, but within Guatemala, we're also looking to change organizations, institutions, and building networks, both within Guatemala and with developed countries. So the specific objectives are to conduct strategic applied health research. All of what we're doing has to have one way or another a policy impact. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to lead to a policy change because that's more a process than a product, but at least have that in your aims. And obviously, right there at the beginning is focused on the Framework Convention of Tobacco Control, which is a WHO treaty to halt the tobacco epidemic. We sought to develop a multidisciplinary team that will design and implement research. And finally, to develop a research network between an institution in Guatemala, which is the cardiovascular unit, and Washington University in St. Louis up here in the U.S. So it originally was a four-year program. We got funding for an additional fifth year. The first 3 years, which are not 4 years, are funded by International Development Research Center over in Ottawa, which has a branch called Research for International Tobacco Control, whose aim is specifically to implement the FCTC. One more year is going to be funded by WashU. So we recruit two one-year fellows per year, and for the first months, they just get basic research methods 101, you know, like EPI, biostats, research design, and they get to choose a project. It has to be policy-related and NCD-related, but they get to choose it. We don't want me or somebody else imposing their agenda on them, but we want them to choose their own topic because it is their project after all. And then during the rest 10 months of the project, they get to implement the project, but very important to disseminate it. And by that, we mean presenting in a meeting like APHA, publishing in a peer-reviewed journal, but there also has to be local dissemination in the lay public, with the lay public, in the media, and to the people who actually provided the data. We provide fellow salary and grant support, and I highlight the amount of money we provide to implement the grants. $10,000 is not a lot, you know, in the U.S., but in Guatemala, $10,000 is going to get you a long way. And that will provide funds to hire research assistants, pay for the trips to meetings, do data collection, and so on and so forth. So this is in brief the design of the program. We have online courses. They get courses on research methods. They get training in writing and presentations, protocol writing. They have to write a research protocol that is going to be internally peer-reviewed. It's not that we're not going to fund it. We already have the funds, but we want them to go through a protocol writing process. They need to write a manuscript, and they need to present either as a poster or orally their project in an international meeting. We now have other faculty involved, both within Guatemala and from Washington University. Something very simple as a journal club has proven to be one of the most useful things we have. It is building a network. It is getting them engaged in reading the peer-reviewed literature. It's getting them to learn how to critically evaluate the literature. And very important, we have regular meeting with the fellows in terms of their progress. And again, this goes back to the mentoring issue. It's not that I'm their boss, but we're trying to integrate that idea of mentoring in Guatemala. And there's continued reviews both of their project and their training. And we're trying to evaluate their research projects, but also using outcome mapping, how we're changing their behavior. It's hard to tell we are or not changing someone's behavior, but at least having them thinking about where do they want to practice, where do they want to get training, and what is it that's wrong about the medical education training in Guatemala. So far we have 5 fellows, most of them are recent medical graduates. We have 1 medical student and 1 registered dietitian. And even though I said the program is focused on tobacco, right now we're starting to broaden the scope a little bit. And the first projects were all related to tobacco, smoking prevalence in rural Guatemala, anecdotes about a smoke-free law, cessation medication in pharmacies, single cigarette sales, tobacco and midwives. And I highlight the last project that it's already broadening a little bit more into the NCD control agenda. So we have managed to be successful with individuals. We already have 3 peer-reviewed publications in tobacco control. We have presented 5 posters in international meetings in which the fellows are the first authors, and this is helping a little bit their CVs. Institutions, we have managed to build a network within the Cancer Institute in Guatemala and the Nutritional Institute in Panama, in Guatemala as well. And don't get me wrong, I'm mentioning NCI, and the NCI in Guatemala is not precisely that the NCI here. It's just one building with a lot of physicians treating poor patients with very advanced cancer stages. And then we're also building a multidisciplinary network with the anthropology department at Washington University. So not only looking at medicine, but other allied fields that will definitely contribute to the health of most Guatemalans. So where do we go next? Recruiting fellows. We're trying to expand the program, as you heard, around not only medical students or recent medical graduates, but also nutritionists. So we're trying to bring a couple of lawyers into the program. We need to emphasize the knowledge translation. As I said, it is nice that we're getting it into the peer-reviewed literature, presenting it in meetings, but we need to make that research actually lead to a change in Guatemala. What challenges we face? I think recruitment is the number one challenge. We need to secure more funding, obviously, like we all do. The long-term institutional commitment, it is a challenge. First of all, because the institutions, most institutions in Guatemala do not have specific funds allocated for research. So far, the program is just identified as you're working for Dr. Barnoya, which is kind of nice for my ego, but not for the program. You know, if I decide to leave Guatemala, that's it. And then finally, we're trying to have this research idea built into the culture and as a career, and not losing the focus, which is making policy-relevant research. Thank you.
Thank you so much.